it. So, and just to make the point, it's actually that feminine energy which makes the ankle bells tinkle. That's what is the distraction. It's not simply the sound of it. If a man takes these ankle bells and let them tinkle, it will not have the same effect, you know? So, but we never hear stories the other way round, you know, that a woman loses her mind because a pujari rings a bell there or something, you know? Whatever, you know? So male energy, simply not that powerful. So who wants to read the next one? This is a good one too. Yes?
Sagadava Vishwasazu, while flying in the sky, could see Devahuti playing ball on the roof of the palace. Ball playing was also current, but aristocratic girls would not play in a public place. Ball playing and other such pleasures were not meant for ordinary women and girls. Only princesses like Devahuti could indulge in such sports. It is described here that she was seen from the flying airplane. This indicates that the palace was very high, otherwise how could one see her from an airplane? The vision was so distinct that the Gandhara Vishwaju was bewildered by her beauty and by hearing the sound of her ankle bells, and being captivated by the sound and beauty, he fell down. Kadava Muni mentioned the incident as he had heard it.
Yes. So actually, Vishwavasu didn't only fall down, but he literally fell out of his aeroplane. You know, just by seeing Devahuti playing ball on the rooftop there, you know. But I don't think we have the other way around, you know, that even if a man is only dressed in a gamsa and he plays ball on the rooftop there, that the women are losing their minds, you know.
Only Krishna.
Krishna is an exception. Yeah, so these are just little shastric examples, you know, of the power of the feminine energy, you know. So, how do we apply this in our life here? We can understand from this that actually the atmosphere within a temple or within society at large really depends on the purity and consciousness of the women, actually. Because that energy permeates the whole atmosphere, you know, much stronger than the male energy, you know. So basically, you know, we can conclude, because the main topic was who is leading, the men or the women. Actually, the men are leading up front, but ultimately, actually, the women are leading through their powerful energy, actually. Because it really, you know, sets the standards of whole society or community or temple, the consciousness and purity of a woman, of the women. I always notice this very clearly when I travel, you know, and when I come to a temple where the women are not so well trained and well behaved, it contaminates the whole atmosphere. But then in another temple where the women are nicely behaved and trained, and you know, they subdue, they know how to control and subdue their powerful energy. There, you know, consciousness, atmosphere, very nice, you know. So that's the power of the female energy. Actually, the women lead through their energy, not by being in the front and telling everybody what to do, but through their powerful energy, you see. By either being the auspicious source of energy or the contaminating and bewildering, you know. So now we have this nice little example, you know, me coming from a medical background, I used to work as a physiotherapist. for my physiotherapy, I do know the spine in the body is what keeps the body upright and straight. If your spine is out of shape, you're pretty finished. You know, you can't do very much, you know. You're quadriplegic, querschnittsgelähmt, or something, you know. So spine is one of the most important parts of the body, which really keeps the whole body functioning and the whole body upright and straight. So, but now where is the spine? It's in the back, right? It's in the back. So this is basically the position of women. They are like the spine of human society, actually. They really keep human society upright and straight. You know? Yes. Through their powerful energy, you know? Yes, 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 definitely. But, well, in spiritual culture, you know, they're working from behind. They're like the spine, giving strength to the whole human society from behind. You know? And what happens to the body if the spine wants to be in the front? Right? You imagine your spine wants to be in the front here, seen in the front, visible. You know, whole body is topsy-turvy. Right? And that's basically what's going on in human society. Spine wants to be in the front. That's the problem. And it was willfully propagated so that women can be more exploited for sense gratification. Yes, I will give you today, yeah, one or two articles. I have two articles. Maybe I'll just give them both to you. Where these things are there, described in the articles. I didn't even know before I read these articles that in America, all the books were removed from libraries who describe any traditional roles of women. Women being mothers and wives. They were removed from the libraries. And then they put on TV shows, you know, at the prime watching time, you know, 7:30 in the evening on the weekend or whatever, or during the week, maybe weekend people are out. And there was these programs, These Successful Women or something, you know, and there was all kinds of women on there with careers. Not a single one was there who is a mother and housewife. Yes, so it was systematically propagated. Yes, systematically. And of course also after the Second World War, they needed women in the factories. You know, so many men were killed. The whole thing of production and rebuilding, you know, the women, you know, and so, and that was propagated. So the modern woman goes to work. She works in the factory. That's progress. That's modern, you know. Yeah, yeah. So these things were consciously done. And everybody just fell into the trap, you know? Yes, 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 yes. Yeah, so anyway, so women, men are like the head, we can say, and the women are the, like the spine, you know? One without the other cannot function. They are both needed. And they perfectly support each other and complement each other, and, you know? Yes. Yes. Do we have any questions about this?
Yes. Yeah, but in the modern industrialized world, it is very difficult to tell the woman just stay at home. Then she has her washing machine, she has everything. But
yes.
When the children go to school,
yes.
then what?
We will get to this when we talk about how to address a woman. there I'm getting into the whole mother thing, and there we will briefly look what is the position of mother in spiritual culture, what it is in materialistic culture, and wow, whoo, this is a whole eye-opener, you know, so we'll park that and leave that for a little later. Yes, any other points about this thing of women's energy being so powerful? Yes.
Sorry, I have to say, because it comes up in my mind that when you see like the Beatles in the 60s, that all these women, they fainted because of these four boys, or Michael Jackson, you know, who was like adored by all women. And there's also some Shakti in men, isn't it?
Pop stars. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like the Beatles, they made women faint by their Shakti, and Michael Jackson, he killed also so many women behind him. And
well, I would more say like this, maybe I'm speculating a little bit here, but for me it is just a proof how it is built into both vehicles, male and female, to actually worship somebody. You know? And instead of worshipping Krishna and Guru and Prabhupada, we have some perverted reflection here. You know, I mean, German history, Hitler, you know, we all know it. You know, everybody, my mother was telling me once, you know, how she had some darshan of the Pope, you know, in Italy. And how everybody was screaming and, oh, the Pope, ki jai, or whatever, you know. They were all fainting nearly in ecstasy.
Yeah.
And she was very, it really scared her because it made her remember so much the Hitler days, you know, where whole Germany was at Hitler's feet and all adoring him and the leader, der Führer kommt, and so on. I hope I'm not going to put into jail now if this comes on. You better edit this, you know. I don't know the German laws. Maybe you're not allowed to even say such things.
Okay.
Please, you know. Don't want to be taken to court here, you know. So yes, but my mother, you know, described this. What power behind this mass hysteria is. Hysterie, ne? Nicht Geschichte, history, but hysterie. Ne? That this has a very powerful effect. And I dare say, you know, with the Beatles, people fainting, that effect might come more from that rather than from, you know, George Harrison or Paul McCartney as an individual, you know. Just this whole thing. A football field, same thing, you know. You know, it's just. But I think the way I understand this, it is simply that there is even a part in the brain. The scientists discovered a part in the brain which deals with religion. Yes, which the animals don't have, and that's why they came to the conclusion that oh, maybe there is a reason why human beings are attracted to religion. Because there's actually a certain part in the brain, you know? And my understanding is that that part of the brain takes over, you know, if it is not engaged in religion, in God worship, it is in a perverted way taken over there with football and George Harrison or Mick Jagger or whatever it may be, you know? Yeah, I think that's...
And it's idol.
Yeah. Because it is given there in the vehicle again, you know, to facilitate that we can develop this relationship with Krishna. You know? Mm. Yeah, quite amazing. Yeah. Mm. Yes. Anyway, let us read the fat printed conclusions here. Once our men understand the important role of the women being the auspicious source of energy to them, then it becomes very evident that men have to protect and care for this important source of auspicious energy by fulfilling the needs of women and give care and protection. Within family life, and within the yatras at large. So we I talked about it already. I think it's no need to talk about it again. And to finish off this chapter, Manu Samhita, where women are honored, there the gods are pleased. But where they are not honored, no sacred rite yields rewards. Can we read this in German? How do you translate this? Somebody?
Wenn die Männer diese wichtige Rolle der Frauen.
No, not that one, just Manu Samhita.
Achso, Manu Samhita, okay, sorry. Da, wo die Frauen geehrt werden, da sind die Götter zufriedengestellt. Wo sie aber nicht geehrt werden, da resultiert aus keinem heiligen Ritus ein Nutzen.
So, you know, naturally also the Sankirtan Yajna will not, you know, bring its results. If we don't deeply establish this, how women have to be honored and respected and cared for and protected. Very clear. This is something which is not clearly established yet, really, in ISKCON, you know? And without really getting these insights into spiritual culture, you know, it cannot be properly established. You know, it will just go from one thing to the other thing, from the patriarchat to the matriarchat, you know. But no, both together, actually, you know. The men have to be the heroes, they have to be the protectors, providers, and take charge. And the women are the auspicious source of energy. That's the yin-yang thing, you know. That's how it's meant to fit. Not either patriarchat or matriarchat. No, it's both together. That's the point, you know. And that can only be established if we get these deeper insights, you know. Right? Okay. Anything about this? It will become even more clearer once we move on to the protection of the women, you know, of women. It will come up again. Do you still have some brains and concentration here to at least start lesson number 3? Otherwise, we just come too far behind. Yeah?
Yes.
And maybe we can go through it pretty swiftly.
Yeah, I have a question.
What?
The true swiftly. Role of the man is actually to guide the woman spiritually. That is his main thing. That he should really bring her to Krishna. But sometimes the women, they are more materialistic. They are not so much inclined to go for Harinam or to read in Bhagavatam. So they are a little more materialistic.
Yeah.
Therefore, in other cultures, it's actually like that. With the Muslims, the women stay at home, care for the children, and the men go to the mosque.
Yes.
What would you say about this? Because here we have these other standards.
To give a satisfying answer is again, you know, 15 minutes talk or something, you know, because there's so many different aspects. I dare say the whole thing will become clearer as we understand the principles more. But just to quickly, very briefly give you an answer, and I hope I can be brief in this. Radha Swami says when couples are getting married, you know, we know the men give the vow, they give spiritual, emotional, and material protection. What do you think? Which one of these three are the most important? Spiritual, emotional, material?
Emotional. All three together.
Well, indeed, that's Radha Swami's answer. The emotional one is most important for a husband. Yes. Because that's what family life is meant for. And the emotional protection and care and fulfilled needs, that's what the husband is there for mainly, you know. The spiritual protection she can get from other sources. There's guru, there's shiksha guru, there's mentor, there's that, you know. And even financially, well, she can be clever enough to earn a little bit of money there somehow on the side. But the emotional protection is the main one, at least for within marriage, you know. So, but no doubt, you know, within human society at large, that's why we have the whole hierarchy, you know, that the men, you know, are above the women. And the man as a class is meant to give everything, you know. And that's the point. If Krishna is removed from the hierarchy, then the men start thinking they are the big enjoyers there, you know. So no doubt, the men mainly have to fulfill also that need of guru, of, you know, advising, sadhu, and so on, you know. But within family, the emotional one is the most important. That's why women need to get married, so that they get this emotional fulfillment within their family, so they have a husband to hug and a few kids to kiss and all that, you know. And that emotional need is built in so that the women take nicely care of the children. Otherwise, if the women had men's nature, they would forget that they have a baby there or something. You know, we saw it in the skit. Oh God, what am I doing with this thing? And does it smell bad? No, you know. Yeah, you know. So, you know. Okay. So let us start at least. Let's see how long does this go. Have we distributed lesson number 4 yet?
Three.
Hang on. Yes, quickly, let's give out lesson number 3. Just to see how long it is.
The English one starts already on the back.
Yeah, English starts on the back. Maybe this is too impractical to always give out the sheets when we, you know, maybe
yeah,
we should just...
Yeah,
maybe we should just give out everything. It saves time, you know.
Yes.
Usually I have 5 sessions with 5 lessons, and, you know, and I give the session, the papers out when I start the lesson each day. You know, and there's no shuffling around with papers, and it's also not printed like this, that it starts halfway through there, you know, so that people don't spend time reading up front and all this, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. What, which language? Okay. And what about me? I need an English one. Okay, yes, I mean, we could get through this pretty quickly, actually,
right,
if we're just on the focus here. So, understanding the difference between spiritual culture and materialistic culture, how different they are, obviously, there have to be 2 kinds of beauties, right? That beauty within spiritual culture and that beauty within materialistic culture. Actually, when I took my mother the first time to India some 10, 15 years ago, this was one of her first realizations. She said, wow, the women in India have a different kind of beauty. Their beauty is not so provocative and agitating. That's a different beauty, a soothing and cooling beauty, you know. She noticed this immediately, even though she's not really practicing Krishna consciousness or anything, you know. So, quickly, let's refresh our mind here. Material beauty, material culture, it's all about sense enjoyment, sex life. So naturally, the beauty in materialistic culture is what? What's the criteria?
Body.
Huh?
Bodily beauty. Bodily
Yes, it is all geared towards, you know, attracting the opposite sex. Really. Very strongly, you know. Yes. In fact, we can go that far, and that's even in the Bhagavatam, I think, 12th canto, you know, that where, how is it? I can't quite remember. That success, you know, that attraction is simply based on sex life, you know. And a woman, for a woman in materialistic culture, the criteria of success is how many men she can bewilder. You know? Definitely. That's the criteria of success. Has to be, because that's the topmost thing. You know? So the more men she can make turn her head after her, the more successful, you know? I remember I was once on the plane and I was reading the paper just to see what's going on in the world. And it was Marilyn Monroe's disappearance day or appearance day or something, and there was some homages there, you know, people glorifying Marilyn Monroe. And I remember reading some glorification. She was the most lusty woman in the world. She was so lusty. Yes, no, really, it's true. I'm not making it up. Yeah, people, you know, materialistic people think that is a glory, you know, to actually be lustful. Yeah. And Marilyn Monroe, you know, she was it, you know. Yeah. Yeah, so obviously, you know, sensually agitating, disturbing for the mind of the opposite gender, feeding the fever of lusty desires. Now the interesting thing, not only in men, but also in women. Yes, also in women, because it feeds that whole competitiveness. Who is more lusty? You know? Yes. That's why sometimes women even say, I don't dress up for men, I dress up for other women, to win the competition. Yeah, so it's a whole thing, you know. So that's the point, you know. It's even agitating and contaminating within the same gender. And I mean, for men, it is also there. You know, for men, for women, it's more clear and obvious. But for men, also two different kinds of beauty. You know, there's the real cool one, you know, whatever. You only have to look at some advertisement of hairdressers and their fashions there, then you see, you know, all the materialistic standards of beauty amongst the men, you know. It also is all to appeal to the opposite sex there, you know. And same thing is there too, that kind of contamination also contaminates other men. You know, that's why it is said it is actually more contaminating to associate with a man who is attached to sex life than to associate with the opposite sex, with a woman. More contaminating, because that attachment to anything is found in the person's heart, and it is a heart-to-heart transfer. Yes. So that's why it is more contaminating to associate with a person who has, you know, these kind of attachments. That's where we catch it from. It's like a contagious disease, ansteckende Krankheit. If we associate with a person closely and intimately, personally, with emotions being involved, then we catch whatever they carry in their hearts, in the good as well as in the bad. That's what happens with sadhu sangha, you know. If we associate with sadhu, especially if we serve him and like him and so on, then we catch what he carries in his heart. So now Amrita Vani, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, says something. Wearing opulent clothing, however, is more harmful to others than eating palatable foods. He was discussing this in the previous sentence. When we dress attractively, we draw others' eyes to ourselves. The purpose of gorgeous dress is to distract people's minds and eyes from Lord Hari's worship. Right? You get it? So that means, in men as well as in women, if we overdo it, if, you know, women should dress nicely for their husband, but if they overdo it, you know, and in each yatra we have such cases where it's just overdone, over the top, you know, where we look like some Christmas tree here, you know, full of lametta or something, you know. What's behind it? We actually want to bring attraction to ourselves. We compete with Srimati Radharani here, you know. Yes, yes. We want that everybody looks at us and not so much at the Lord, actually. You know, subtle, on the subtle platform it goes on. And same thing can also be there in men, you know. There's also, or even within Krishna consciousness, there's all kinds of ways how to try and stand out, right? With like the bright green dhoti there or something, you know, that all the women are not attracted to Krishna's beauty, but they all look at the green dhoti there or something, you know? You know, so yeah, so that is there, you know? Yes. That's when the beauty becomes materialistic, you know? Even when it is in the frame of spiritual culture, you know. So, you know, this materialistic beauty leads to contamination and degradation, distraction from Krishna, basically. So, but now, spiritual beauty, what's that? What's spiritual beauty based on?
Purification.
Yes, it's based on purity, purity of the soul, right? Krishna is all attractive, the pure spirit soul is also attractive, maybe not in full like Krishna, but something, you know, in minute quantity, yes. And the more we become Krishna conscious, the more the natural beauty of the soul actually shines through, you know. It does. Very often we think, you know, yes, my individuality, my personality, actually this is all our conditioning, you know? Yes. We've got our soul is with a thick layer of all kinds of conditioning covered over. And we think, oh, that's my nature and my personality. No, it's not your nature, not your personality, it's just your conditioning, actually. And we have to scrub this, we have to throw all this luggage overboard here, you know. And then the more we really scrub and throw luggage overboard, the more the actual true beauty of the soul shines through, you know. Let us read... first, these nice quotes. 10:13:51. Who wants to read? You got it?
What you should fill in there for spiritual beauty?
Purity.
Purity.
Yes, and the beauty of the soul shines through. And of course, I mean, we can fill it in a little bit more. You know, we can say spiritual beauty, of course the consciousness is the main thing, but it is also within the frame of spiritual culture, namely sari, dhoti, tilak, you know, neck beads, you know, shika, happy effulgent devotees, you know. And for the women, there's a little bit more scope because it is the natural, you know, tendency of a woman of wanting to be beautiful. The women's mood and energy brings in the beauty and color in life. So there's more, you know, bigger frame to fulfill this in the scope of sari. You know, so many different colors, styles, qualities, designs, and you know. And for the man, more simple. You know. So let us read. Who wants to read? Yes.
10.13.51 from Bhagavad Gita. All living entities are serving Krishna in different ways, but when they are Krishna conscious, their service is fully manifest. As a flower in the bud gradually fructifies and yields its desired aroma and beauty, so when a living entity comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness, the beauty of his real form comes into full blossom. That is the ultimate beauty and the ultimate fulfillment of desire.
Yes, very beautiful, isn't it? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I think it is still Prabhupada, 10.13. So, you know, it sounds really like Prabhupada. So that's the point. Prabhupada gives that comparison with a flower, you know. So, and the flower is initially in the bud, and then this process of Krishna consciousness brings the flower to full blossom. You know, that is the true beauty and the true nature of the individual spirit soul. In Krishna consciousness, it all manifests. You know, or the natural relationship with Krishna comes through. You know, what is our eternal relationship with Krishna? Sooner or later, it will become manifest and apparent. And then, you know, the flower is fully blossoming and the beauty and the aroma is fully manifest. And that's actual beauty. You know, that's true spiritual beauty. Yeah, next one. Who wants to read the next one? Some volunteers.
Bhagavatam 10.20.13. As all creatures of the land and water took advantage of the newly fallen rainwater, their forms became attractive and pleasing. Just a devotee becomes beautiful by engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord. Purport. We have a practical experience of this with our students in the International Society of Krishna Consciousness. Before becoming students, they were dirty looking. Also, they had naturally beautiful personal features. But due to having no information of Krishna consciousness, they appeared very dirty and wretched. Since they have taken to Krishna consciousness, their health has improved, and by following the rules and regulations, they have increased their bodily luster. When they are dressed with saffron-colored cloths, with tilak on their foreheads and beads in their hands and on their necks, they look exactly as if they have come directly from Vaikuntha.
So, very nice, you know? Very nice description. So that's the thing. Simply through spiritual practice, you know, by following the four regulative principles, you know, the health becomes stronger, the effulgence becomes stronger, and one, you know, increases one's beauty, actually, you know. That's the spiritual beauty, really, you know. Yes, and as it is said, we look like just coming straight from Vaikuntha. So, as we said, Krishna is all attractive. By becoming Krishna conscious, we also become a little attractive, since the soul is by nature all beautiful. Purity brings out the beauty of the soul. Spiritual beauty leads to upliftment of the consciousness and auspiciousness. And before we were going to that stage, we also had that spiritual beauty, you know, materialistic beauty is essentially agitating, is disturbing the mind, you know, it's heating, you know, for the mind, But here, spiritual beauty is cooling the mind. It has a very cooling and soothing effect to the mind and senses. It reduces the fever of lusty desires, you know, and it fulfills that desire for beauty on a higher level. You know, this is also important to know and clearly understand to men, you know, because sometimes women tell me, oh, but my husband asked me to, you know, put on a miniskirt or something, you know. So obviously the men also have to understand that there's two kinds of beauties. And that desire to have a beautiful wife, you know, we should opt for the cooling and soothing and uplifting beauty rather than the heating and agitating one, you know. And I mean, in the marriage and spiritual culture, I'm also having quotes there where Prabhupada describes how a beautifully decorated wife makes a husband, helps him to think soberly and inspires him to fulfill the household duties, you know. So there's all kinds of subtle effects actually, you know, when we have the spiritual beauty. And I even notice this with my assistants, because I often travel with Madhujis who are assisting me. If they are not properly dressed, you know, if they're dirty or shabby and rags and blah, 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 you know, neglectful, bah, it's really tamaguna, you know, it really affects me and irritates me. But if they're nicely dressed, clean and nice and chaste, this has an uplifting effect. It really does, you know. Yes, not only to the men, but also to other women, you know. Yes, yes. So now, can we just spend 10 more minutes and finish this? Yes, you don't mind? I'm sorry to torture you here. But just to finish it, so in the afternoon we can start with the next topic. Transcendental fashion, sari dhoti, always appropriate, fits everyone at any time, you know? No matter whether we put on 10 kilos or we lose 10 kilos, sari dhoti always fits. You know, even if the women are pregnant, no problem, no need for some pregnancy fashion here. Sari fits, you know, very practical. Keeps all parts of the body perfectly covered, you know? It reduces bodily concept, bodily identification, you know, gross and subtle, you know. We discussed it yesterday. Importance of covering the head. Yeah, well, that's not so important for the men. And we touched upon it a little bit that, you know. Actually, let me say one thing. There is subtle reasons for covering the head. Because the head is actually like an antenna. It takes up the energies. And it also gives off toxins. Yes, it's interesting. Even on a gross platform, the head, the scalp, a lot of toxins come out of the body, mainly at night when we sleep. That's why, you know, after a few nights, the pillow starts smelling funny, you know. Maybe you noticed. So this is because through the scalp, all the toxins come out at night. So, but not only the toxins come out at night, but also we do, you know, we do assimilate different energies through the head, actually. Yes. And that's another reason why in spiritual culture people do cover their head. And it's actually not only the women, also the men. In many spiritual cultures, they have some kepi on, you know. The Muslims, even the Hindus, they have, you know, under some regime, you know, Gandhi's times, they had these funny kepi things, you know. In Nepal, too, they wear some funny hats. Even in Germany, I remember in the village, you know, 50 years ago, all the men were here wearing hats, right? You can remember this. Huh? Yes, yes. Yes, Yes, hats or caps, you know, and depending on what occasion you were attending, you had some fancy black hat with a little feather in it or whatever, or in the field some other thing, you know, people were wearing hats. So there is a deeper reason for this. Some subtle energetic thing. It does protect, you know, from what, yeah, because the atmosphere is filled of energies, you know, yes, yes, because consciousness, very powerful energy. If you're a little perceptive, you can pick up from far away a person's energy. You know, if a person is very angry or lusty or something, you can feel it, you know. Or the opposite, if a person is very pure and elevated, wow, just the person having him present in the room, even if he doesn't say a word, it uplifts the whole atmosphere. You know, it's very powerful energy, you know. Yes, yes. So, you know, especially in these modern days with so many crazy people in this world, the atmosphere is filled with, you know, contaminating energies, and we all take it up through the head, mainly, you know. So that's why in spiritual cultures people were covering the head, you know, not only the women but also the men actually. But then because the hair becomes so important, because in materialistic, so, you know, culture, sex life is the top thing, and the hair plays a really important part. It's a whole central thing. You know, people, women spend so much time at the hairdresser and so much money, and the men also, you know, as we discussed yesterday. It's a whole sexual, central thing, you know. So I think that must be one reason why the hat became out of fashion, you know, because then you can't show off your whole frisure there, you know. You know, yeah, so there's deeper reasons, you know, for the head covering. Yes, we cover ourselves nicely to cover valuables from thieves. When uncovered, you call attention and put out the message, I'm available for sense gratification. So that's, of course, foremost for the women there, you know. This unchaste dressing is simply a sign, I am available for sense gratification. But interestingly, anybody who serves as a pujari knows that when you bring the offering plate to the deities, you should cover the offering. And if you don't cover the offering and somebody looks at it, it is contaminated. Right? It is mentally enjoyed. Somebody has been lusting over the food there, thinking, oh, that pakora looks nice or something. And then you cannot offer it anymore. It is contaminated. Same thing is going on if a woman or a man also, you know, is receiving lusty glances upon himself or herself. It is actually contaminating. It actually leads to disease, because all diseases start in the subtle body, you know, and especially for the women, all this, you know, materialistic, ridiculous, lusty fashion, it all attracts all these lusty glances. Whew, this is heavy contamination. No wonder, you know, our women in Kali Yuga are completely, you know, they are what they are, you know, completely frustrated, unhealthy, mad, crazy, imbalanced, emotionally suffering, you know. So, I mean, what do you expect, you know, if you have all these lusty glances, you know, coming towards you, you know. And same is there also for men. It's not that only the men are giving lusty glances. If the women are throwing lusty glances and arrows, you know, very powerful. So this has a contaminating effect, you know. And that's why we also say as devotees, one should not eat in public, you know, because if you have non-devotees looking at your food, lusting over your food, that can cause disease, you know? Yes. So that's the point. In Kali Yuga, we become so dull-headed and unperceptive towards these subtleties, you know? And then we lose all the important elements, you know, because we don't understand them anymore, you know? And somehow the Kali Yuga person has to manifest, you know? So that's how the Kali Yuga person will be bred, you know? And last but not least, and very, very quickly, we mentioned it already a little bit, if one wants to, one can, of course, turn the spiritual fashion into materialistic and agitating fashion, you know? And this has set into ISKCON very heavily over the last 3-4 years or so, that the women discover this, you know, that they wear the saris in such a way that they're not spiritual fashion anymore, right? Maybe you noticed, right? You know, wearing them all low, and with big decolleté, they are showing somehow or other, and, you know, short chollies, we don't want to get into all the details. Mm-hmm. But it is possible, you know, of course, if you want to, you can turn the most perfect and sublime spiritual fashion into a materialistic and agitating fashion, or see through little things and, you know, yes. And that's why we have to teach these principles so people understand what's going on, you know? Because nobody, even of the senior devotees, often they don't dare to speak up, you know? And that's why I think, that's because first I was thinking maybe to take this chapter out of the men's course, but no, I thought, no, the men have to understand it and they should preach about it. This is, for example, something that can be preached in the Bhagavatam classes, these two different kinds of beauties, just to make the women understand, you know, that the men are also smart. They don't go for the materialistic beauty. They rather want the cooling and uplifting beauty here, you know. We have to become a little bolder in preaching some things, not the one that the woman has to submit, you know, that we want to leave aside, but all these other things should be preached by the men with compassion, you know, with in a service mood, wanting to help spread the culture, you know. I really feel for it strongly. That's why I included it, you know. Yes. Any questions? Yes?
Yeah, about the saris, it's stated that it covers the body very nicely, but actually, at least in most knowledges I see with the saris, they actually need a coat to cover the body properly, because one shoulder is left practically on, so you can see much if you look at it without this.
And to be honest, even that is not proper. Like I saw it in Bangladesh, how they wear the sari. They wear that over the shoulder. Mm. Yes.
Over one shoulder.
Yeah, and the other one is covered by the headpiece anyway, you know.
So it's double covered.
No, see, even I always wear this on top. Without this, I don't feel properly dressed. But yeah, at the moment I'm not wearing this part properly because it is meant to actually go to here.
Okay.
Yeah. And that side is covered anyway because that, you know, you're not meant to keep that here or make a turban out of it and have the bare back there, you know, showing the little tattoo there and all this. So, but no, you're meant to, you know, wear like this, you know, so that side is also covered. So if we wear the side properly, it is actually very nicely covered, you know. Yes. And I mean, I'm telling this to the women, but maybe just I should also share with the men, just for you to understand the psychology, you know. That actually the way, you know, men's minds work, men get agitated through the eyes, first of all. And women through the ears. Yeah, you can take it. No problem. I'm just getting organized here. Yes, men through the eyes, women through the ears. And as we, there is a verse in the Bhagavatam which describes that sense gratification is based on that principle that we are having some intense expectation of a certain satisfaction which actually never comes. That's the basis of sense gratification. Not only in sex life, also in other things that you, oh yeah, that weekend I'm going to do it like this and like that. And there's this intense expectation to have some satisfaction. But then when you plan it all, it's all disappointing and it all goes the other way. And you don't get actually what you really were expecting. But the mind dreams up some expectation here, you know. And this element is very strongly used in materialistic fashion of the women. The fashion designers, they know these things. They're very clever. They study psychology, you know. Even in the advertisement, they also studied psychology just to know how to make people buy, you know, and how to infiltrate the consciousness and awaken lusty desires so that they can sell what they want to sell. And this is really there in the fashion, you know, because men's minds work like this, that, you know, when they see something but not everything, then the man's mind thinks, I wish I could see more there, you know. What is happening higher there with that mini skirt? What is coming there then? You know, or with the décolleté, or a little bit lower, please. What's happening there, you know? So this is actually what this whole materialistic fashion is based on, you know, that this is going on in the men's minds, you know? And in that way, it increases these lusty expectations and desires, you know, and the fashion is just cold-heartedly using this, you know, just to feed the whole fever of lust here in men as well as in women and so on, you know, so that there can be more exploitation and sense gratification. So it's a whole, you know, it's a real demoniac thing, you know. So, and the spiritual fashion should be completely working against this. This is why if we wear a sari properly, even that little thing, you know, it's such a little detail, but the way many women wear the saris today is that it is pinned like this and goes up that way, and here in the trolley is of course much lower than mine, so that whole thing is free, you know. And again, it makes a whole subtle change, because in the man's mind, you know, then yeah, oh yeah, okay, what's lower there, you know? And if you wear the sari properly, it is meant to cover this area very, very nicely, you know? And I had once this experience, I had an assistant who was wearing the sari like this, and oh, for me, very hard to tolerate, you know. But then because she was new, I didn't know her so well, I thought, all right, I'll tolerate for a couple of weeks. But then once we had a relationship established, I said to her, please, you know, while you are my assistant, please wear the sari like this, you know. And you would not believe. Her whole aura changed. It made such a big difference. She was like a different person just because of wearing the sari like this. The whole energy changed. And she was truly transformed from materialistic beauty to spiritual beauty. It was amazing. And then later, she came back to her temple after she had served, you know, assisted me, traveled with me. She came back to Kiev, Ashram. And all the women even noticed it. They said, you look so much more beautiful now. What did you do? And then she shared that. She said, yes, Devaki Mataji told me I should wear my sari like this. Yeah, I was shocked what difference it made, you know. Yes. And they all said, I want to do the same thing. I want to also look like you. You know, I want to have that beauty too. And they all started, her close friends started wearing the sari like that, you know. So just such little, little things make a whole big change. It's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable, you know. It just, you know, brings a whole different energy into the atmosphere, you know, just such little things. So that's why sari is the most perfect way to cover the body. But we have to know properly how to, you know, how to wear it, you know. Okay, well, sorry for going so long, what to do. Who is group number three? Okay. So that's your topic, the morning topic here, of simply concluding this whole thing of, you know, women competing. You can also we did actually also discuss this very nicely this morning in the role plays, right? The competitive woman telling the husband what to do. We actually had it there. So maybe just take the two kinds of beauties. Right? Spiritually and materially. Yes. Yeah, I think that's it. That's enough topic there, isn't it?
Yes,
it is. Yes. And the fourth group we will discuss this afternoon. So, before you all go, I do want to give you a feedback form, which you kindly fill in by the time we are splitting tomorrow. Oh yes, we've got them here in English, and they are in German. And hang on, I will give you a few things.
I just take both.
Hang on. We have... Huh? Okay, then I will also give you one article. Men and women more confused than ever. Männer und Frauen verwirrter denn je. We've got one in Russian. For who was it? Who needs the Russian one? Here, for you. That's for you.
Thank you very much.
And here... we have those in English and in German. If you find the time, maybe read it today, and maybe very, very quickly we could just collect. While you read it, please simply mark. Hang on, let's be attentive here. While we are reading it, hang on, just stop, sit down, please. Oi, Haribo, sit down. You know, otherwise it's too, sorry, it's my fault, I gave it to you too. You know, so when you read it, just quickly write on a piece of paper what you find very impressive, what really strikes you, you know. But just as a little clarification, this article is an imagined conversation. It is kind of a little science, how do you say? Science? Yeah, what's the adjective? Science fictionary. So, you know, that it's not all fact what you read in this discussion. They're just, you know, pretending in 50 years' time or something, you know? Because some people who did not know in Radadesh, they were all shocked, they could hardly sleep. What? This is already going on in the world, my God! But it's not. So, you know, not yet. It's simply projecting where we are heading and how mad and crazy and degraded things can become if we don't wake up. Right? Okay. Good. Okay, thank you very much. We will meet again at 4:00. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Jai. Jai.